All right, you're back in the DFSR here with an MLB podcast. It's Friday, August 24th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Oh, baby. DFSR.com is the site. DFSR.com/... Do we switch it over to NFL? It's either DFSR.com/MLB or NFL.
They both still work.
Oh, baby. Get yourself started. I'm just so excited today. I got a lot of things to talk about. So,
yeah, a lot of old babies so far. That's yeah. We're only 30 seconds in.
Well, I did spend the first 30 seconds before just complaining about leaf blowers again, but we'll move on from that. DFSR.com/MLB is the site. Go head on over and check out a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. You can still play MLB, obviously. NFL is about to kick into gear. We have our week 1 projections up, so you can go check that out. We're going to have premium content going up during the season, so it's going to all be covered under one subscription package, free for 3 days, and then just $29.95 a month after. I have an article going up today with 3 prop bets for the season. I'm pretty excited about it. I shouldn't say actually, because you should always put your money where your mouth is, but these are ones that I actually just did put in yesterday online. So 3 prop bets going up for the NFL season that you can go check out going up later today. Buddy, we're going to get into MLB in a second, but college football comes back out of nowhere yesterday. Wow. College football, it's FanDuel. DraftKings. There's all of a sudden, you know, you refresh their lobby and there's a CFB link, but it's kind of dead. Like there's no live contest. So everyone gets themselves into a lather. I text our old college football analyst, Casey Carruthers, who completely crushed it for years and years on CFB. And then he just, you know, kind of just disappeared, crushed him. Or it crushed him to have it go away and then get him all excited. They post contests yesterday. They also brought DFS back to Texas yesterday, just for the whole state is back on board for DFS landscape. It's an exciting time. It's always been exciting for DFS. But with college football, let's start there for 1 second. I know you weren't a big college football guy, but do you see that as a good sign that, like, I'm going to go for the explicit tag here, but that seems to me like DraftKings just told the NCAA to be like, dude, go F yourself. We're just going to do what you want. Just bring it. See, try to turn this off like once it's back on. Do you see that as a good sign that they brought it back, the Texas thing? I don't know. I have a couple thoughts there, and then I want to bring up one more college football thing.
There's a lot going on there with your question, so let me see how I do here. So for starters, I am not really into college football itself for the same reason I just don't like to watch local girls' high school volleyball or whatever.
Whoa,
like I just don't,
not the same comparison, but
I just don't like to watch people. I just don't like to watch people do something worse than I can just watch people do better. So.
Right.
That's like, you know, unless it's like my kids. If my kids are playing a sport, I will watch them play basketball. Otherwise, I'm just going to watch the best players. But I love college football because it makes us a bunch of money because people really like it. So from that perspective, I'm all about college football for the most part. I thought it was just incredible that the NCAA in the first place had enough clout to even scare these people because what are these people doing? They're literally just like, they're making contests and just like talking about the results of a game. So the NCAA is like, you can't use stats from this. That's exploiting these kids. Meanwhile, no one's getting paid a single dollar. The NCAA raking.
Oh, the NCAA is the most high horse, corrupt piece of garbage institution that functions at a high level. And I'm including like places like Monsanto and shit like that. I think NCAA is more corrupt than any other industry out there. Like, so anyway, yeah, I agree with you. And I kind of just like it as an FU back to them. Just say, dude, just bring it, dude. People love this stuff. Like, whatever. You can sue us. We're good, you know?
Ultimately, like, it's better for the NCAA anyway. Like, I get that they probably, I would guess, my strong suspicion has always been, like, behind closed doors, there was just, like, something else going on where they were, like, wanted a cut or, you know, like, I don't know, just like typical mobster BS like these people like to do. So,
well, so anyway, look, so the last piece about this, we'll get to baseball because that's what people came here for. But our Casey, our college football guy, did speaks to the absurdity of just some laws and things, but he gets himself just in a complete tizzy. I get spammed with texts all day, which is good. It's like exciting stuff. He's going to start writing football content right away. Wants to know if we should post for the first slate. Goes and logs in the DraftKings. He lives in Pennsylvania. College football banned in Pennsylvania. So now he is in a complete, total panic mode about what he's going to do. Like, how far can he drive? What's a reasonable thing to do? How much can he reasonably leave his family on a weekend? He has more latitude than most to just leave his family for many hours, I think. So we'll see how that goes and see what kind of time he's able to vote for, because I think he's talking about pulling into like doing a U-turn at different state lines. All right, we are going to – anyway, so just a note about that. We will have college football content going up sooner than later, hopefully for the first slate, which is I think this next coming Saturday. All right, MLB going on today. We'll get to the Texas thing with DFS later. All right, I'm all over the place now. Baseball. We have a pretty big Friday slate here. The theme seems to be pitchers that have a little bit of variance built into them, maybe more than the average good pitcher, against very bad teams. Where do you want to start with starting pitcher on this slate? There are some guys who I really like the matchups for, and I have some question marks sort of about how great I feel, let's say, rostering them in cash. I'm gonna shorten that list to, let's say, right now, Rich Hill, Mike Foltynewicz, and Mike Clevenger. Gio Gonzalez exists somewhere on this list as well. Where do you want to start here with starting pitcher?
Yeah, I don't really want to start with starting pitcher. Like, when I was looking at this, I like just kept searching around, being like, is there someone like maybe not showing up in the system?
Maybe Max Scherzer start again today, or DeGrom. I mean, the real kick in the pants is that yesterday there was like a 4-3 game early slate that had Scherzer, DeGrom, Bumgarner, Price, and like two other and like one other good pitcher. Like, there was six teams, and four of them had ace level guys basically. So now when that happens, there's no one here. Just so you know, there is no one left off the list today. This is the list. Is there one you can pick out of that crowd that you would feel a little bit better than others? And we can include the matchups here as well, because they do have pretty good matchups.
Yeah, I think you'll see Mike Foltynewicz come out of it ultimately. You know, you can make a case for these other guys, Clevenger and Hill, but I think with Foltynewicz, you get a combination of the elite K stuff this season, top 10 K rate in all the majors. 10.42 Ks per nine is just truly great. He's definitely running a little bit hot in terms of his ERA compared to his xFIP, but that can happen when you're just striking out so many players, more than a player an inning, you know, that you're going to run hot from time to time. And the Marlins are just one of the truly elite matchups. And, you know, Rich Hill obviously has somehow the slightly better matchup against the Padres, but the Marlins this season, bottom three WOBA against right-handed pitching with a top 5 K rate to go with it. Oh, no, it's a top 10 K rate, sorry. And that just means that, like, for my money, if you compare his risks, because, you know, he's got some risk, he's got some wildness issues, but if you compare his risks to some of these other guys, like with Hill, primarily it's going to be the innings. How long can he actually stay on the mound? You're not going to question the matchup there, but the innings per start have been in the dumpster, and his peripherals are just worse anyway. So with Hill, I think it's more of a price play, and we've talked about ad nauseum, like, how being in a price battle isn't always where you want to be at starting pitcher, at least on FanDuel. And with Clevenger, you know, you don't get nearly the K upside. You're shaving off to go beneath a K per inning. And while you save a little bit on the walks, like, I don't know, it seems like you're killing your upside. You're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. You know, you get a little bit more safety on the innings. You get by far the worst matchup of these three guys that we're going to consider against the Royals. And the Royals primarily, you know, they're bad on the WA front or WOBA front, but the strikeouts come down quite a bit. So, yeah, I think, as I weigh through all of the options here, my gut leans Foltynewicz, but I'm curious to know what you think.
Yeah, I think so too. I think our projection's a little low on him. The Marlins, they do strike out a lot, but they are a bad hitting team. They don't strike out as much as some of these other teams. I'm going to go guy by guy here, because you kind of grouped them all together, which I think is good.
You gave me all the guys, so I gave you all the guys.
Yeah, no, I think it was the right way to go, because I think that it makes sense to just kind of compare them. Ultimately, all we want to do is compare them to each other. So I think it's great to just go from a bird's eye view. With Foltynewicz, the Marlins, even as bad as they are, they do not strike out a ton. Like, there's mostly just like a bunch of light hitting Starlin Castro kind of guys, and much worse than him, like, down the chain. But you do not get a ton of K upside. You do get a great matchup, of course. Foltynewicz is interesting. He has changed his makeup a little bit. So we talked about this many times, but anytime you see I see a spike in Ks, or just a clear difference in how many guys striking out, I want to see if he's doing something different. He is. He added a slider to his repertoire, and I believe, like, I just meant to bring this up, I'm pretty sure his slider, like, topped out as, like, the most effective slider in the majors. It might have been, like, Scherzer than him or something like that. Like, it was something, like, the slider was so devastating that he's thrown it more and more every single season since 2015, 14%, 19%, 21%, and now 27%. So he's clearly figured out that if I just do a fastball slider, I'm just going to strike more guys out. Now he's going to, and actually he was able to, he's actually added a few more walks to the repertoire too. So with that, with the strikeouts, and you see this from time to time with pitchers, is like, I'm pretty sure those two things usually go together, right? Like, if you're going more for the strikeout, you are going to usually increase your walks just a little bit in an effort, because you're just looking to make no contact at all. I'm totally with you on Foltynewicz. I think the fact that he's a little bit more expensive makes it a little tougher on FanDuel, but still, 10.5 is not much. You're really not spending a ton there. And 11,000 on DraftKings might be pushing it a little bit. This one I'll have to kind of, like, look a little closer at. Rich Hill, you mentioned the innings. You know, how much do we trust? So the biggest question with the Dodgers is always, you know, how many innings and how many pitches a guy is going to be allowed to throw. Rich Hill, basically since July 20th was 95 pitches or less, and then last game just gets up to 111 pitches. Still's only six innings, and he had walked five guys. I do not want to believe that 111 pitches is like the new norm for him at all. Is it too risky with Dodgers pitchers to try to figure out if the situation lines up? Because like one thing the Dodgers definitely do more than some other teams is if like Rich Hill is at 95 pitches, or let's even worse, let's say Rich Hill's at like 90 pitches and his spot comes up in the order, he's just getting pinch hit for, right? Whereas like if he's at 90 pitches and his spot's not up in the order, he comes back out. And so like you're really at the whim of that. Like other teams aren't as stringent with stuff like this, but the Dodgers definitely are. They will just take a guy out. Or it doesn't work out that way and it gets up to 111 pitches. Do you think that he's more like the 95 pitch guy? And if that's the case, I mean, six innings really feels like you're pushing it on him, because it's just tough to pitch six innings with only 95 pitches.
Yeah, I don't think it's responsible to pencil him in for six innings for this start. And I wish I had a longer sample size than this, and maybe it just would make sense to go back and take a look at some other Dodgers pitchers here. But the last time, the other only time Hill topped 100 pitches in a game, he got pulled after five innings and 73 pitches in his next start against the Pirates. And that is very worrisome to me. He wasn't pitching badly either. Five Ks against one walk and two earned runs allowed. So the Dodgers, you know, probably the most notorious team for actually protecting their pitcher's arm. So good for them. Not great for us for DFS purposes.
Sure.
So that makes me feel very, very concerned that, you know, they're not looking at this. Like, there's a lot of teams out there are just kind of sleepwalking through this whole thing, right? There's just a manager. His eyes are kind of glazed over. It's been 130 games or whatever. And he's like, oh, is Richie still out there? How's he looking? Yeah, good. Okay, he can stay out. The Dodgers aren't that way. And so when they do get, you know, chased up to these higher pitch counts, it's normally because the final inning, you know, they just kind of get caught with their pants down a little bit and they wind up pushing through that final inning for whatever reason. And I don't really feel great about Hill's prospects tonight. I'd be very, not to say he doesn't have huge upside. I mean, it's the best possible matchup in the majors, still a good pitching park. But I would still definitely have my concerns, and obviously a huge big tournament upside guy. But if he pitches 80 pitches tonight, don't come crying to me about it. That's my general take on it.
Yeah, I think actually for tournaments, I would actually just go. I'm actually less excited about him in tournaments, because I just don't think he has the innings in him. Like, where I do like think Fulton Woods does have, you know, a seven inning game in him, you know, like a seven and even 7 2/3, something like that. I'm just pushing up. I know I'm going fractions here, but it just doesn't seem like Hill has that. But he has a huge money line and the -243 best of the day. Great park, great, you know, very one of the very best matchups you can have. Although San Diego will stack some righty bats at the top of the lineup. I'm with you. I actually just for some reason see him a little bit maybe more like a cash pitcher, because I think the floor is going to be there. Like he'll hit his 95 pitches or something like that. Although that 73 pitch thing does have me a little concerned, and I made a note to go back and look to see if that is a real thing for some, not for the non Kershaw types like Alex Wood. I'm sure Maeda, like guys like this, like how much does that, you know, will they just ramp it back if the pitch counts? And then the last guy here, Clevinger, he's kind of the opposite of Fultonowicz. His K's have gone down, but so have the walks, right? So like his numbers actually look not too dissimilar from Fultonowicz. He was striking out last year 10 batters per nine, but also walking almost 4.5. And this year he's sacrificed, you know, possibly intentionally some of the strikeout stuff. He's only striking out about a batter or nine, but the walks are down almost a walk and a half per nine. And that's yielded not too, the only real difference in his numbers, like his xFIP is exactly the same this year as it was last year, basically. But he just pitches more innings now. Like he's good to go for over six innings because he's just keeping it around the plate. He's not running pitch counts up like crazy. And that actually gives him a nice high floor as well. He gets another great matchup against Kansas City, like you mentioned. So a lot of interesting, I think probably between these three guys, I would say Fultonowicz, I like probably the most for tournaments. He probably also does end up having the highest floor in cash, and you just need to kind of figure out, is the price worth it? Because he is, you know, marginally or in some places significantly more expensive than the other guys. Yeah. A guy that's showing up draft, there's always a weird one, DraftKings starting pitcher two. I think ultimately we land on probably just rostering two of these guys together, but guy who really wants to draw out here is Gio Gonzalez. At what point we say Gio Gonzalez, and I really have adjusted this projection down, but he gets the Mets. The Mets are also completely garbage.
How dare you?
But we look at Gio's numbers this year, striking out less than eight batters per nine. The walks are, for a guy that already walked a lot of guys, his walks are now at a career high, and so that's not the place you want to be for a guy that already struggled. I mean, is Gio just an average to possibly below average pitcher this year? And maybe gets helped out a little bit that you just know him as Gio Gonzalez, as a guy that people would roster from time to time and had some good years under his belt. Like, what do you think about Gio here, knowing that he has a fantastic matchup against the Mets, who really are just one of the worst offenses in baseball?
Sure. I mean, so for starters, Gio is a decidedly below average pitcher, from my opinion, and more so, too, if you weight it towards recent results. And, you know, you want to be careful about that sometimes, but the Ks are at a career low. Well, I'm sorry, you can go back to 2010, his first full season in the majors, and you can get a K number less than that. But Ks are at basically a career low. The walks are at an all-time high. Nothing is really looking too great here. He's gotten absolutely dumpstered in his last five or six starts, like 8 runs against Miami. Yep. Miami, not the greatest team. 5 runs against St. Louis. 1 run against Atlanta, but only struck out 3 in that game. 5 earned runs against Cincinnati. Then had a decent start against the Marlins, but 4 Ks against 4 walks. Then a 5 earned run start against Milwaukee. 5 Ks against 5 walks. The guy stinks real bad, and that's why his price has come down. But this is why, you know, it can be really, really tricky for the naked eye to evaluate things like this, because your gut tells you when you see Gio Gonzalez in the lineup, holy moly, this is going to be disgustingly not so pretty. And you only have to pay $6,400 for it, so right, it makes room for some pretty significant bats as well. I can't say, like, you know, I can't seriously say that I can just, like, gut check that and figure out if that's the right player or not. I can say that there's a lineup with Mike Clevinger instead of Gio Gonzalez that our projection system has as only being just a hair under a point lower than the Gio lineup, so I wouldn't be surprised to see if that's where things headed as more, you know, cheap bat value became available throughout the day.
Which, for just if you're not looking at the projections, that's less than 1% difference. Because these,
yeah.
So it's a completely insignificant difference in the grand scheme of things. On a day with the Coors game, which we'll get to in a second, yeah, it sometimes does make sense to try to save some of these places at the Mets. And the reason, you know, I've really drawn down Gio's projection for this season. Like, I just kind of have been keeping it in line with what he's been doing this year, because I do believe there's major regression here. He's just getting worse. And then you get the Mets. They strike out 26% of the time against lefties. They rank second to last in the league. There's no reason to think that, like, this team has improved over the team that has been so bad against lefties. They hit Ahmed Rosario at the top of the lineup. The guys just couldn't be worse. Like, almost any other guy on the team would be better to hit leadoff, and they throw him out there. Then they have guys like Jeff McNeil. I know they have Flores, but then they have, like, Joey Bautista. This team's horrible. So I guess Frazier's not the only guy that's not real bad. So it's like, okay, well, but I mean, but then so were the Marlins when he faced him the other day, and they just lit him up in Marlins Park. So I don't know.
Well, I always say that, you know, these are all still major league hitters, and they can be bad. And if the pitcher is bad enough, these guys can all hit it. Like, all these guys would have 900 OPSs in the minors. Well, maybe not all of them. A lot of them would. Like, they're not good by major league standards, but I don't know. I don't think you want to get too carried away.
And then last thing, we'll get to some stacks here, but where you also land is that when we're kind of debating or hand-wringing about who to start in cash, Rich Hill, Mike Clevinger, Gio Gonzalez, I'm throwing him in there, or Michael Tinowitz, and that's, like, basically the list. The next thing you can figure out is the reason that list is so short is because the rest of the pitchers on the slate are so bad, which means that there's a lot of very good bats in very good spots. So we'll talk about those in a second. Why don't you hit us up with a sponsor and we'll get to some stacks.
Yeah, man. FantasyFactor.com, coming right around the corner. They just wrote a great article for us, actually, on our site about survivor pools, but they're going to be continuing to run their innovative contests coming up this fall. There'll be free rolls for football every Sunday, I'm sure. And just great salary cap game formats without all the sharks populating all your games with hundreds and hundreds of lineup. Like Doug, he's going to be in there gobbling up all your potential earnings. So go check them out, fantasyfactor.com.
All right, stacks for the evening slate. There are a bunch of bad pitchers going here, but let's start the game in Coors. I feel like, I don't know if we just haven't had a ton of games in Coors. Like, I got to look real quick to see if there maybe it's been a while since we played these games. Maybe there's some good pitchers. It feels like we haven't had quite the focus on Coors as there maybe have been in past seasons. That could just be me having sort of a brain fart about it. But the Cardinals go in and face off against Sensatella. Miles Mikolas is on the hill for St. Louis. There's the run line right now is 10.5, which actually, all things really considered, long, for these pitchers is pretty low. Mikolas isn't a terrible pitcher, but does allow a lot of contact. And then Sensatella is not all that good either. One, is that line straight? I mean, you already said it seems low. When you see a Coors run line this low, knowing that the prices are already inflated, like, basically the entire Colorado lineup is over 5,000 on DraftKings. Looks like the St. Louis lineup is not quite there, though, except for Matt Carpenter, who's maybe one of the most expensive hitters in the slate. And then, but they're a very righty heavy lineup as well. So like they're going to go all righties against Sensatella. Is this a game you want to prioritize considering the pricing, or is there enough bad pitchers through the rest of the slate that you think we can kind of get away with it?
No, I don't think we want to prioritize this game. The 10.5 total is actually really, really low, and for a Coors game, that is. And the thing about the kind of mindless DraftKings and FanDuel algorithms is that they're going to continue to get that Coors bump price-wise, in spite of, for whatever reason, this being a low total game. You know, I'm a little bit, I think there's still some upside here if you think the industry is going to just be totally off it. Mikolas does allow a lot of contact, and we've seen that contact-based pitchers just do terribly in Coors because, you know, with the thinner air, the BABIPs go up, balls travel further, and so on and so forth. So, you know, if he's getting by, you know, pitchers are a really funny thing where you can build a career out of giving up 300-foot fly balls, but if those turn into 320-foot fly balls in Coors or 330-foot fly balls, then you're in deep trouble really quickly. So, yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic for this game for big tournaments, but for cash, I think it's a pretty significant overpay.
He's basically a heavy ground ball pitcher. He's 50% ground ball rate, which is, you know, we've seen that Coors just doesn't get you sometimes just enough movement on your pitches to maintain the ground ball rate. Like, that's another problem too. Like, you can get ground balls, but ground ball pitchers, you know, sometimes are working on very thin margins in terms of like what they can get done. And if all of a sudden you lose, I don't know, some percentage of your just overall spin, I guess we'll call it, because of the altitude, then all of a sudden a ground ball pitcher that allows a lot of contact, like you said, can get in big trouble. Other guys that are going here, let's say we don't need to prioritize that game, even though there's a potential for a decent amount of runs, but maybe not relative to the price. I got a list of some bad pitchers here. I don't know if you want to start with one of these teams.
Yeah, so I also have a list of bad pitchers. Some of them, unfortunately, are up against bad teams. You know, guys like Hector Velasquez come to mind here. So I still think I like the Rays. If we're just in the sneaky stack territory still, I kind of like the Rays here. Velasquez this season, just 5 starts, but 36 total appearances, almost just a hair over a 5K per 9. That means there's going to be a lot of contact. Yes, the guy does have a 2.74 xFIP this season, or I'm sorry, a 2.74 ERA, but the 4.72 xFIP, just rearranging the numbers, inverting the numbers. Whoa, it's a palindrome. I'm nothing if not attuned to a mathematical beauty, Doug. But yes, the Rays I do think do have pretty significant upside for big tournaments, in spite of not being, you know, a conventionally powerhouse team.
Yeah, we're in a situation where I actually did not think you were gonna go with the Rays first here because they're just.
Yeah, I'm just trying to go off board, dude. I'm not trying to.
Well, because like
I'm not trying to just give people exactly if they want that, they can go read articles anywhere. You know what I mean?
So I was kind of trending a different direction here. I mean, one of the guys that I have really wanted to stack against is a guy like Alex Cobb. Cobb against the Yankees,
yeah, of course.
Less than 6 strikeouts per 9. XFIP is lower than the ERA. The ERA is over 5. The XFIP is only around 4.5, so not nearly as bad there. But you get a Yankees lineup, and mostly because I'm focused here on if the pitching is the state, if we're looking at pitchers that just aren't all that expensive anyway, rostering up the top of this lineup, Gardner, Stanton, Hicks, the three guys that I'm looking at the most, I don't think that you're in a situation where you're too worried about overpaying for it. They are right around 5 implied runs on the day. Cobb is, he's just bad. I mean, there's a couple of these teams that just can't. They just simply just trot out the worst pitchers every single. Like the White Sox are like this, obviously. The Orioles have been like this all season. They just trot out the very worst pitchers in baseball. There's no other way to put it. Cobb probably doesn't rank all the way up there with that group, but he trends toward it, at least, let's say. And so he's closer to that group than he is to the Max Scherzers of the world, for sure. And it's not particularly close.
Yeah.
Where else? I have a couple other guys here. You mentioned, obviously, Velasquez. I mentioned Cobb. Are there other bad pitchers that you're seeing that are standing out with offenses in good spots?
Yeah, sure. So, again, in the mediocre offenses but bad pitchers category, the Phillies going up against Ryan Barucki. We actually do have a pretty decent cache of guys with a sub 6 K per 9 going today, and that's always a pretty nice thing to take a look at. Barucki, you know, he was only okay in the minors. The guy had a 6.78 K per 9 in AAA this season before coming up and understandably struggling even more. The ERA at 4.27 is still lower than the 4.89 xFIP, and you know, he was having some ground ball. Like, his ground ball rate was higher earlier in the season, so people were wondering if he was going to be able to kind of translate some of his AA ground ball rates. That hasn't really come to fruition. He's been really getting beat up. Tons of hard contact. 331 BABIP allowed. Looks like it could be legit. And I think the Phillies, especially the right-handed bats, look like they're in a really solid spot there.
I'm dealing with a lawnmower thing here in the background, so I'm trying to go on mute as we continue a conversation. But yeah, the Phillies, they've switched their lineup around enough that you are going to get right-handed bats near the top here, especially guys in the better sides of their splits. You might see Wilson Ramos hitting cleanup. They moved Rhys Hoskins up to this two spot at times, and they move their lineup around just enough to keep the guys relatively cheap. So that the reason I mentioned the lineup moving around is that when you reduce plate appearance expectation even once every two or three games for a guy, that does is usually going to, because that's the highest correlated thing that you can just look at for in terms of overall production in baseball, that when you move a lineup around enough, you just find guys are typically a little less or a little underpriced maybe relative to what their actual talent is if you get them back up to the top of the spot. So all this to say, the Phillies are one of these teams outside of maybe Hoskins and Hernandez. They do move the lineup around enough that you can usually grab them maybe, I don't know, 5 to 10% cheaper than they really should be, especially in a bad matchup. I mean, other guys here, Dan Straley's going today. Dan Straley is some kind of terrible this season, over a 5X FIP, 7.5 Ks per nine, walks more than 4 batters per nine, just all around bad. The Braves, you know, it's funny about the Braves. This is not a great park for them. That's what's driving the run line down. But they're also such a top-heavy team that I kind of like teams like this. When the run line's high, you can, like, stacking Acuna. They moved Inciarte into the second spot and moved Albus down. But basically, the Acuna, who's he's probably a little too expensive because he's been running so hot lately. But Acuna, Inciarte, and Freddie Freeman, that stack, even kind of Markakis, looks pretty good against a guy like Straley. Does that make sense to you? Like, a team, you know, some teams are just spread out. Like the Indians are just like kind of good from top to bottom when they're firing at all cylinders. Yeah, the Braves really aren't like that. Like they're like the very top of their lineup is very good, and then there's a steep drop off. Do you see that as an opportunity to just kind of stack it maybe a little bit more, knowing that a lot of their production does come from the very top of the order?
Absolutely, and this is why, like, when people just look at a game with a high total or a higher total than usual relative to price, and then just start wanting to jam in hitters. You know, I think I've talked about this all season, where basically you just can't do that because it doesn't help you if the eighth batter wraps out a two-run double in the seventh inning if he's not on your DFS team, right? So teams that are top-heavy and in good spots are teams that really we want to focus on. I actually think the Nats fall into that category against Jason Vargas today as well. Like, if you can yep. pick out some of the really good hitters on the top of the lineup and ignore the bad ones on the bottom of the lineup, you can put yourself in a really solid position against a guy with a 7.67 ERA. But, you know, if Jason Vargas were facing one of those teams, like, I don't know, the Padres or, I don't know, the Royals or, you know, teams without legitimate DFS talent, then all of a sudden you just... It's not really an opportunity spot anymore because they can score all the runs they want. But if everyone is slightly overpriced relative to even a good matchup, then they're just not going to be in your lineup.
Yeah, and the Nats have had some team turnover in the short term. You know, they got rid of this is a little different because a lot of these are lefty guys, but they got rid of Daniel Murphy. They got rid of Matt Adams at the trade deadline. Harper almost cleared waivers, or he did clear waivers, and then they couldn't work out a deal with the Dodgers. Although I think they have till like the end of today to work that out. They're not going to. But guys like Rendon and Turner at the top of the lineup, and Rendon's excellent against lefty pitching. Turner is, I believe, slightly better against lefties, but just has a ton of speed as well. I think Vargas is another one of these guys that just you're going completely bum hunting when he's got a 5X FIP, which you could say he's running bad on the 6.7 ERA, 7.67 ERA. So he's like, oh my God, two and three quarters runs higher. What do I have to do to get this thing right? But I like really where the Nats are standing. Hey, real quick, someone commented on this in chat the other day, and I meant to ask you. So one of the biggest problems with baseball, this is really not about stacks, but something I just want to bring up about like how people think about baseball, and then we can get out of here. But there's an idea about baseball, I think, and when you talk to people on a daily basis about it, and i.e., I'm going to say we're talking to like people in our premium chat because people just want to talk about baseball. There's an idea that everyone thinks every team is like touch and go, let's say, right? It's like because they only focus on the team when they play the team in DFS, yeah, sure. Or like either play against that team or roster the hitters. And of course, the nature of baseball is going to be so volatile that you're going to think every team is like this. So I hope that makes sense what I'm saying. Like everyone's I love rostering the Indians, but man, they're just like, they're all or nothing sometimes.
Hit or miss.
Like, yeah, hit or miss, like to pun intend. But do you have, real quick before we go, do you have an idea of who the most consistent offenses are from standard deviation or coefficient of variation? Do you have an idea of who the most consistent offenses of baseball this season have been relative to the group. So I'm going to use coefficient of variation and who the most volatile ones have gone. And it's interesting because teams on both ends of the offensive spectrum fit into this. Obviously going to be like a wild guess.
Well, I don't think it's actually too wild because I think probably just the way with coefficient of variation works, the teams that score less runs probably are going to be in a position to appear to be more consistent because there's
simply that's not
less...
necessarily true.
Just okay, so you know. That's just my gut. I'm just explaining. Thanks for interrupting me. You're putting me in a position to make me make a wild guess. And then, I guess if you ran a correlation to runs scored and coefficient of variation, I don't know if you actually did that. I would guess it would be inverse, but I could be wrong there. So that's my initial thing. San Francisco. That's just a random guess. Go ahead, tell me the truth.
The most consistent or most inconsistent?
That would be the most consistent.
They're right in the middle of the pack. So the most consistent in terms of coefficient of variation this season for runs, New York, the Yankees the highest, Boston second, but then the Twins and then Cincinnati are the most like consistent on a game-to-game basis. The bottom are two bad teams, the Mets and the Orioles, but then the most inconsistent team on a game-to-game basis, it looks like, is the Nationals. So and then the Cubs are over there too as well. And then the Dodgers also. So I don't know if that's because they just have huge games in them. You know, like maybe sometimes if you have enough big games in you, that will increase like your standard deviation as well. But I just thought it was interesting that teams sort of did fall all over the place. There maybe is something to the hit or miss category and to a point where I just can't really figure it out. All right, we're going to get out of here. DFSR.com is the site. DFSR.com/MLB will get you started on a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, MLB, NFL as well. We'll be back again next week talking more baseball. Buddy, enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, man. I will.